May 27th, 2020. To the founding members of the Minnesota State Organization of the Blind. Minnesota Federationists send you greetings and congratulations on this, the 100th anniversary of your first convention on May 27th, 1920. When you began laying the groundwork in December 1919, then elected the officers and filed the paperwork that following May, did you imagine it would last 100 years and counting? You intended to make a difference then, and you certainly have. In 2020, we're here to tell you your dream is still going strong. We know you got right to work trying to deal with those first basic problems of housing and poverty. We salute you and thank you for being people of action and dedication to making life better for blind people throughout the state. You'll be happy to know we're still working hard today to help blind Minnesotans live the lives we want. There are things about this organization 100 years later that you would not recognize at all. The portable smartphones and the internet that we use for communication are more than half a century in the future. Television was yet to come, and even radio would not see its first commercial broadcast until November 1920. You weren't yet using guide dogs or even canes very much when traveling, and you weren't yet flying in airplanes around the country on a regular basis like many of us do now. Even the issues we work on now might seem foreign. Insisting on accessible voting? In May 1920, the women of Minnesota weren't even yet permitted to vote in most elections. Access to digital content in education? What would that even mean in a world where talking books hardly existed yet and Braille was a brand new standard? To us, a special home for blind people would be treating us like children, but to you, it was a ticket to independence. However, we the blind of Minnesota feel sure that you would know us by our belief in the capacity of blind people and by the determination and the persistence of members throughout the generations to speak for ourselves, to help each other, and to be the drivers of our own destiny. We took your brand of activism nationwide and joined with other blind activists to become the National Federation of the Blind, and now Minnesotans are helping to make a difference across the country. In 1920, a terrifying global pandemic was less than 2 years in your past. In 2020, another pandemic has altered our lives. We had visions of getting together in a big crowd to celebrate this anniversary, and we will do that as soon as we can. For now, though, we've called upon your organizing spirit and the marvels of modern technology to record this letter for you, even while social distancing, and found another way to bring our voices together to celebrate 100 of the many ways this organization has made a difference. May you be proud of what you started. We certainly are. With love, hope, and determination, the members of the National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota, 2020.
One 100 years ago, we started the first statewide advocacy organization of blind people in Minnesota. The Minnesota State Organization of the Blind was conceived at a meeting in December 1919 and officially formed at its first convention on May 27, 1920.
Membership dues were set to $1 in 1920 and not increased till 1996, when they were raised to $5, as they remain today.
In 1929, to address the problems blind people were having being accepted into housing, we established the Home and Industrial Center for the Blind so that blind adults could live independently and set up their own businesses.
Over the next 50 years, our efforts helped make it common and accepted for blind people to live independently in regular housing like everyone else. So we closed the Home for the Blind in 1980.
In 1935, we started the Minnesota Bulletin, a statewide newsletter with several issues each year. It is still published today.
Because of the extreme economic hardship faced by blind people, our first legislative goal was the establishment of a pension for the blind.
Throughout the setbacks and victories in our efforts around public assistance,
we pushed for our rights to self-determination about where we would live and what jobs we would hold.
In 1941, we convinced the state legislature to designate funds for rehabilitation in the biennial budget for the Department for the Blind.
In 1940, Minnesota joined forces with leaders from six other states to form the National Federation of the Blind, which is celebrating 80 years of community and activism this year.
Minnesota has been present at the National Convention every year since that first one in 1940. Now we usually bring more than 80 Minnesotans.
Until 1977, there were two Minnesota affiliates of the National Federation of the Blind. The two organizations worked together on legislative matters to present a united front.
We dropped the word state from our name in 1954, and in 1972, we completely changed our name from Minnesota Organization of Blind to National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota to better show a national voice.
In 1947, 1970, 1980, and 1982, we hosted the National Federation of the Blind Convention right here in Minnesota.
Members of the National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota have been active all across our national movement, holding leadership roles and elected offices.
Our longest-serving state president, Joyce Scanlon, was elected to the National Board of Directors for more than 30 years, serving first as secretary and then as vice president.
Since 1920, we have held well over 150 statewide conventions.
Our chapter in Duluth was first organized in the late 1940s, early 1950s. Its most recent iteration is called the Twin Ports Chapter.
In the 1940s and beyond, we fought for the right of blind people to travel on public transportation without being required to have a sighted person with us.
Throughout our existence, we have advocated for robust funding for public transportation and for better public transit service around the state of Minnesota.
We have maintained a steady presence in the Minnesota legislature, building relationships and educating about our issues through our annual organized day at the Capitol and other activities.
In 1969, we achieved passage of a white cane law guaranteeing access to public accommodations by blind persons using canes or dogs.
For many years, we have put on campaigns to educate the public about the white cane law and about how blind people can safely cross streets.
We launched the student division in 1971 to help build positive attitudes toward blindness so we could excel in higher education and employment.
In the 1970s, our student division worked to convince St. Cloud State to abolish a policy requiring that people seeking to enter the teaching profession through their program be fully sighted.
Also in the 1970s, our student division led our successful advocacy for live readers paid by State Services for the Blind to earn a better wage.
Throughout its existence, the Minnesota Association of Blind Students has hosted and participated in statewide and regional student seminars to give information and help students develop advocacy skills.
Since the beginning of the Washington Seminar in the early 1970s, we have sent a delegation of Minnesotans each year to advocate in the Congress on issues affecting all blind Americans.
Beginning in the 1940s, we operated a sales service program to make sure that blind Minnesotans could get canes, braille slates, and other such products conveniently from a local source and at a reasonable price. We still sell canes today.
In 1971, we formed the Central Minnesota Chapter, organizing blind people in the St. Cloud area and beyond.
We have awarded dozens of scholarships to blind college students in Minnesota to enhance their education and employment opportunities.
In 1973, Minnesota Federationists were successful in passing amendments to the state's human rights law prohibiting discrimination of blind people in employment, education, housing, and other public services.
In 1974, we formed a chapter in Rochester, Minnesota.
In 1975, we got legislation passed making it illegal to charge blind people higher insurance rates without actuarial evidence.
For many years, we marched to protest the low standards set by the National Accreditation Council for Agencies Serving the Blind, NAC, NAC.
We fought alongside Lawrence Kettner, who in 1974 was told by the Minneapolis Society for the Blind that he worked only well enough to earn sub-minimum wages, but in 2001 won a regional award for his excellent work at a job in competitive employment. His story helped discontinue federal funding of NAC.
In 1977, we organized our River Bend chapter with members in the Mankato and New Ulm area.
From 1973 to 1975, we employed a teacher to provide rehabilitation teaching to blind people in their homes to fill the gaps caused by inconsistency in instruction from state services for the blind. Among others, she worked with Larry Kettner, who soon got a job at a competitive wage.
In the 1970s, we won a discrimination lawsuit against the Minneapolis Society for the Blind, now known as Vision Loss Resources, with the resultant publicity greatly diminishing its stature and gaining us recognition as the real authority on blindness.
After the lawsuit, we successfully fought to elect 8 of our members to the board of directors of the Minneapolis Society for the Blind, but when our input continued to be dismissed, we found a better way to make changes.
In the mid-1980s, continuing our efforts to improve adjustment to blindness training in Minnesota, we started Blindness Learning in New Dimensions, Blind Incorporated, our own consumer-directed adjustment to blindness training center, now recognized across the nation and around the world.
In 1993, when Blind Incorporated needed a bigger space for its classes, we assisted with the purchase of the Charles S. Pillsbury Mansion, which is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. In 2009, we helped celebrate complete ownership of the property with a mortgage burning party.
Through Blind Incorporated, we have taught thousands of blind people to advocate for themselves, travel with a long white cane, read Braille, use computers and other skills they need to live independently and obtain successful employment.
In the 1980s, most of the speeches printed in the Braille Monitor from the NFB National Convention were transcribed from the audio by Minnesotans using our brand new IBM computer.
In the mid-1980s, we bought a Braille embosser called a Teal. Among other things, it was used to make Braille copies of the Minnesota Bulletin for almost 20 years.
In the early 1980s, we were instrumental in the establishment of a Rehabilitation Advisory Council for State Services for the Blind, long before such councils were required in federal law.
In the mid-1980s, we helped create and implement an administrative rule for Minnesota State Services for the Blind to promote consistency and quality of rehabilitation services across the state.
Although we continue to battle a high unemployment rate among blind people, our members have not been limited to jobs that society believes are best suited for the blind. We have held all kinds of jobs, like investment broker, teacher, lawyer, computer programmer, language interpreter, professional performer, office worker, court reporter, counselor, cane travel instructor, manager, nanny, cabinet maker, administrator, truck loader, hospital attendant, switchboard operator, beekeeper, software developer, and so many more.
In 1984 and 1985, we actively supported some of our members who experienced discrimination in seating on airlines.
In 1987, we got the first state law in the nation passed, establishing the right of every blind child to learn Braille.
In 1987, we held a large protest against the combining of services for the blind with the General Rehabilitation Organization. This set in motion a series of events that got the Blindness Agency moved to a more identifiable place within the department so it could focus on education and rehabilitation rather than welfare.
In 1990, we protested and publicized discriminatory policies toward the blind on rides at Valley Fair Amusement Park and actively negotiated more fair policies.
In the late 80s and early 90s, we worked with our national organization on a landmark case for a blind vendor in St. Cloud, which set legal precedent, giving blind vendors priority under the Randolph-Shepard Act to operate vending stands in veterans' medical facilities.
In 1995, we brought NFB Newsline to Minnesota at our own expense, giving blind Minnesotans access to hundreds of newspapers and magazines, and later secured state funding through a telephone tax.
In 1998, we brought forward legislation that became the first version of the current statutory requirements for the Minnesota state government to implement non-visual access in its technology procurements. The requirements were further strengthened in 2009.
In 2002, we put up our first website to share information about blindness and our activities with our members and the public.
Also, in 2002, we held a large rally, successfully bringing public attention to the fact that state services for the blind, which made up only 5% of the budget of its larger government department, had sustained 45% of a major budget cut to that department, causing some services to be dismantled.
Throughout the 2000s, we continued the fight for state services for the blind, ultimately helping to bring on and work with new leadership who focused on real solutions for blindness rehabilitation rather than quick fixes and saving dollars.
In 2006, as part of the Help America Vote Act, we helped pass and implement state legislation guaranteeing the right of every blind person in Minnesota to a secret ballot.
We have hosted Saturday schools to teach children independent living skills and give them access to blind role models.
2009, we established a senior division to focus on bringing in people losing sight later in life and connecting all blind seniors with what they need to retain their independence.
In 2010, we achieved passage of legislation requiring counselors hired by State Services for the Blind to undergo at least 6 weeks of adjustment to blindness training. This had never before been required in state law.
In 2014, we formed our at-large chapter so that members who live far from existing chapters can work together and support each other.
At different times, we've had a Runestone chapter, an Iron Range chapter, Austin and Faribault chapters, and a Parents of Blind Children division of the National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota.
Over the years, we have held seminars and other programs for parents of blind children. One seminar included a, quote, compete-a-thon, where children played games to compete on how well they could use their senses other than vision.
In 2016, we secured ongoing funding through the Minnesota State Legislature for State Services for the Blind to provide seniors with the adjustment to blindness training they need to live independently in their homes and communities.
We have participated actively in the national effort to prevent discrimination against riders with guide dogs who use rideshare services.
We have played a large part in our nationwide efforts to ensure non-visual access to software and the internet.
For years, we have participated in Meet the Blind Month in October, along with White Cane Awareness Day, holding events in our community throughout the state.
We have hosted Braille Enrichment for Literacy and Learning, NFB Bell Academies, to teach blind children the value of Braille.
We have worked to ensure fair representation of blind people on the governance board of the Minnesota State Academies for the Blind and the Deaf.
During all this time, we've actively supported maintaining State Academy for the Blind as a separate school.
We protested at Goodwill and in front of a senator's state office against a provision from the Fair Labor Standards Act allowing the payment of sub-minimum wages to people with disabilities.
We have participated in many national protests and rallies, including against misrepresentation of blindness in TV and the movies, and against policies detrimental to the education of blind children.
We have held multi-state conferences for teachers.
We hosted a multi-state conference on rehabilitation.
Our members have participated in many volunteer activities to serve the wider community.
We have worked to build our financial support through grants and from individual donors who share our view that blindness is not what holds us back.
We've baked cookies,
worn funny hats,
had pies thrown in our faces,
eaten hot peppers,
held talent shows,
sold candy,
sweatshirts,
t-shirts,
mugs,
keychains,
raffle tickets,
bracelets, soap cozies,
coffee,
corkscrews,
flashlights,
potato chips,
coasters,
home baked goods,
spaghetti dinners,
all to make sure we have the funds to do our work.
For almost 40 years now, we've held an annual fundraising walk, the Walk for Opportunity. The collective route is now more than 250 miles, and the collective income is more than $150,000.
We have contributed close to $500,000 to our national organization through the PAC program, through generous bequests from individuals, and in many other ways.
More than 40 years ago, we helped found a workplace giving network, which is now called Community Shares of Minnesota. And it is made up of more than 50 nonprofits whose missions address hard issues at their core instead of just dealing with the symptoms.
We have grown our membership by making phone calls, writing letters and emails, meeting people out in the public, sharing information and experiences on social media, and more.
We have sent Minnesotans to help organize and build affiliates in other states.
We have advocated at individual education plan meetings, helping parents insist on quality education for their blind children.
Our members and activities have appeared on local radio and television, raising public awareness about blindness and the issues on which we work.
In countless articles and newspapers around the state, our members have worked to focus the media on our priorities and issues rather than on fears and misconceptions about blindness.
We have created brochures in other publications to educate the public, such as The Blind Side, a senior's brochure, a pedestrian safety brochure, and much more.
We have written articles for and helped distribute national publications like the Braille Monitor, Future Reflections, the Kernel Books, Walking Alone and Marching Together, and Building the Lives We Want.
We maintain an active presence on social media, which is kind of like letters to the editor, but you write them to everyone, and they often have pictures of cats or food in them.
Our members have changed perceptions of blindness by participating in leisure activities, like competing in Ironman triathlons, playing in national Scrabble tournaments, acting in theater productions, doing woodwork, leatherwork, and needlework, traveling throughout the world, cooking fancy creations, participating in archery, building computer games, and anything else you can imagine.
We have assisted many individuals to fight against employment discrimination.
Many times, we have protected the specialized rehabilitation services that blind people need by preventing state services for the blind from being combined with other government agencies.
We have helped many people find their way through government bureaucracy to get the training and services that they need.
We have requested, demanded, and sometimes forced our elected and appointed government officials to do what is right.
We have placed a high value on carefully documenting and preserving the records of our activities.
We have discussed and debated our internal and external organizational policies
adapting to a changing world while holding true to our philosophy and principles.
We've had memorable parties to celebrate our successes. We've built on the hard lessons we learned at times when we did not succeed.
We have celebrated each other's graduations, weddings, new jobs, and new babies. We have grieved those whom we've lost.
We have been mentored by leaders who came before us, and we have mentored those who took up the torch after us.
We have learned from each other, taught each other, disagreed with each other, persuaded each other, gotten to know each other, and built on our knowledge and community all through the generations.
We have changed what it means to be blind, but we're not done yet.
To read the acknowledgments and a written transcript of this audio that includes links to more details about the history of the National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota, visit www.nfbmn.org/100years.